Let's turn in our Bibles tonight to Zechariah, Old Testament prophet, chapter 5. And the Lord's been giving Zechariah visions, and tonight in this chapter we're going to look at visions about cleansing God's people. Two visions. Begin at verse 1. And I turned and lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a flying roll or a flying scroll. And he said unto me, What seest thou? And I answered, I see a flying roll. The length thereof is 20 cubits, and the breadth thereof 10 cubits. So we have this scroll flying through the air in his vision, and it's obviously open so you can read it. And interestingly, he sees the dimensions, 15 by 30 feet. And these were actually the dimensions of the holy place in the tabernacle and then the porch on Solomon's temple. I'm sure there's some significance of that, but I don't know what that is. Verse 3 goes on and says, Then said he unto me, This is the curse that goeth forth over the face of the whole earth, for every one that stealeth shall be cut off as on this side according to it, and every one that sweareth shall be cut off as on that side according to it. I will bring it forth, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter into the house of the thief, and into the house of him that sweareth falsely by my name. And it shall remain in the midst of his house, and shall consume it with the timber thereof and the stones thereof. So the scroll seems to represent the fact that every thief is going to be expelled. Every perjurer is going to be expelled, because you can't steal and you can't lie. And indicating that the text on the scroll contains the Ten Commandments. To sin or to steal was a sin against your neighbor. To perjure was a sin against God, because it's sworn in his name. And the Lord mentions two sins here, one from each side of the Ten Commandments. One is a sin against God, the perjure, and the other is a sin against mankind, to steal. Of the Ten Commandments, this is just a representation of Israel's sin, that God will curse the people and their house who commit these sins. So apparently there was enough of this going on that God had to say something to the people through a vision in Zechariah. In verse 5, he said, Then the angel that talked with me went forth and said unto me, Lift up now thine eyes and see what is this that goeth forth. And I said, What is it? And he said, This is an ephah that goeth forth. He said, Moreover, this is their resemblance through all the earth. And behold, there was lifted up a talent of lead, and this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of the ephah. And he said, This is wickedness. And he cast it into the midst of the ephah, and he cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof. So he has this vision of the woman in the basket here, and lead representing the units of measurement, symbols of commerce that are taking place at the time. But he says, this is their wickedness. And this woman in the basket represents this greed, this materialism, this dishonesty that's going on amongst the people. And it's all being done for the sake of profit, you know, follow the money idea. And he's prophesying now to those who have returned from the Babylonian exile. They came back from Babylon, but they came back with, bringing with them this attitude, this problem of materialism. It got to the point where stuff just meant too much to them, and it was an ancient problem. Of course, it's a modern problem too, isn't it? Stuff, wanting too much stuff. Why is that? I just think it's because it's part of our fallen nature, to want. Says that he throws her down in the basket here and covers her with a lead cover on top. And what he's doing is he's demonstrating his authority over the evil, and then that he can remove that wickedness from Jerusalem. In verse 9 he says, Then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. And they lifted up the ephah between the earth and the heaven. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, Whither do these bear the ephah? And he said unto me, To build it an house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established, and set there upon her own base. And so two women pick up the basket here with the wings. The two women with wings pick up the basket and begin to fly away. And Zechariah says, where are you going with the basket? And they say, well, we're taking it back to Babylon. This spirit, this evil spirit of dishonesty and greed and materialism, we're taking it back to Babylon. Because that's where it started. We brought it with us here. And he's symbolically saying, you know, that's where it belongs. It doesn't belong here amongst this people. And taking this idol of materialism and taking it to where it belongs. And the idea is that it'll eventually be destroyed there. And interestingly, he mentions storks. For what it's worth, storks are unclean animals. But here they're doing the work of God, sending this wickedness back to Babylon. I think that's just an indication to us that God can use anything. He can bring his will about using anything or anyone. In this case, he used storks. So verse chapter 6, I'm going to look at a vision of four horses and their chariots. Just 15 verses. These are short chapters. And I lift and I turned, this is chapter 6, and I turned and lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came four chariots out from between two mountains. And the mountains were mountains of brass. And the first chariot were red horses, and in the second chariot, black horses. And in the third chariot, white horses, and in the fourth chariot, grizzled and bay horses. So here's Zechariah seeing four chariots coming out between two mountains. Many think it's between Mount Zion and the Mount of Olives. But the bronze represents strength, represents judgment. Four chariots, red horses, black horses, white horses, and then spotted horses. Probably the commentators say a better translation of spotted is strong horses. But they seem to be hostile agents here bringing about God's judgment. But in scriptural symbolism, red represents war oftentimes, black famine and death, of course, and white victory, grizzled of pestilence. And sometimes this is connected to Revelation chapter 6. Let's go there to Revelation chapter 6, verse 1. That's easy to find, the last book in the Bible, chapter 6. And I saw the Lamb. We know who the Lamb is. Jesus is the Lamb of God. And I saw the Lamb. I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, come and see. And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, come and see. And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword. And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, come and see. And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand, justice. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. And see, thou hurt not the oil and the wine. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat upon him was Death, and Hell followed with him. And power was given unto him, and with him over the fourth part of the earth, to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. Chapter 7 is where we are right now. Just look over at chapter 7, verse 1, because some connect this with the angelic messengers of judgment in chapter 7. I want to read the first three verses. And after these things, I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. So we'll go back to Zechariah now, chapter 6, verse 4. Then I answered and said unto the angel that talked with me, "What are these, my Lord?" And the angel answered and said unto me, "These are the four spirits of the heavens which go forth from the standing before the Lord of all the earth. The black horses which are therein go forth into the north country, and the white go forth after them, and the grizzled go forth toward the south country. And the bay went forth and sought to go that they might walk to and fro through the earth. And he said, Get you hence, walk to and fro through the earth. So they walked to and fro through the earth. Then cried he upon me and spake unto me, saying, Behold, these that go toward the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country." So these four spirits of heaven, four angelic beings sent from God, if not connected with the four horsemen in Revelation 6, they certainly have a similar mission, going swiftly through the earth. Now, I think about going swiftly through the earth. What goes swiftly through the earth today? Well, we have airplanes, we have jets, we have rockets. But in Zechariah's day, to go swiftly through the earth, that must have been a mystery to them. Like, how is anything going to go swiftly through the earth? And we have, you know, satellite broadcasts and TV and radio and internet, and just we get instant news. You can see something can happen over in India, and we can be watching it live where we are today. So everything can go instantly around the earth today. But the idea here is that God's spirit's at rest when his enemies are judged. The enemies of his people are judged, and we are his people. The Jews are his people. Zechariah, in the middle of 10 visions in one night, just saw this vision of four horses. Some think it refers to Revelation 6 that we read, or Revelation 7. Not really clear, but there is a connection there that I don't fully understand. Let's move on to verse 9. "And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Take of them of the captivity, even of Heldai, of Tobijah, and Jedaiah, which are come from Babylon, and come thou the same day, and go into the house of Josiah the son of Zephaniah. Then take silver and gold, and make crowns, and set them upon the head of Joshua the son of Josedek, the high priest, and speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, Behold, the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. So as refugees from Babylon, they brought gifts from Babylon. But Zechariah is saying something that's a little strange here. He says to put crowns on the priests' heads. Priests would have a priest's headpiece, but kings wore crowns. Kings were never priests, and priests were never kings. So he's told to put a crown on Joshua's head and then prophesy about the coming king. Prophesy about the branch. So we know who he's prophesying about. He's talking the lamb, the branch. So Joshua, interestingly, he's from the royal priesthood. He's from the tribe of Levi. But the Lord promised in his word that the Messiah would come from the tribe of Judah. Now, let me read Revelation 5, verses 4 and 5. He says, John speaking, the apostle John, "And I wept much because no man was found worthy to open and to read the book, neither to look thereon. And one of the elders saith unto me, Weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof." Even in Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1, the Lord prophesied, "There shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots." And he's prophesying the coming Messiah. Joshua means Jehovah's salvation. Joshua is crowned as a prefigure, I think, but of the Messiah, Jesus, who is to come, who would be both king and priest. Now, the book of Hebrews connects nicely in here. Hebrews 4:14 states it clearly. says, seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. The Jews had trouble with the Messiah, Jesus, coming from the tribe of Judah and being called the great high priest. Priesthood, that should come from the tribe of Levi. You know, in Jewish understanding, Jesus is from Judah. How can he be the high priest? The author of Hebrews, now I think it's the Apostle Paul, most do, but he makes it clear that Jesus came from a different priestly order. Jesus is called of God, and this is Hebrews 5:10, that Jesus is called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Not after the order of Levi, but after the order of Melchizedek. In chapter 7 of Hebrews, verse 1 says, for this Melchizedek, king of Salem, or king of Shalom, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him. Now, one of the things I've been trying to find some understanding of, you know, Salem means Shalom or peace. And I've been, if you'd break down Jerusalem, I've been trying to find the roots of the two words to see what that means. I don't know what Jeru means. If anybody can do that word study sometime, Jerusalem. Founded in peace. Okay, that sounds good. Yeah. Founded in peace, Jim says. That sounds good. Well, we don't know much about this Melchizedek because he came before the Levitical priesthood. He was a priest of the Most High God. He received tithes of Abraham. And the order of Melchizedek is a higher level of an order of priesthood than the priestly order of Levi. His name, Melchizedek, appears 9 times in the Bible. All 9 times are in the New Testament, and all those 9 times are in the book of Hebrews. What does that mean? Not sure, but that's where it's concentrated. But the time will come when Jesus will be both king and high priest, the branch, referred to in Zechariah 3:8. Now the branch, this branch, the branch, the root of Jesse, has come once. He came once about 2,000 years ago. He wasn't received, and his own received him not, John 1 says. He will come again, and many won't receive him the second time he comes, but they will receive the false Messiah, the Antichrist. Jesus prophesied this in John chapter 5, verse 43. He says, I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him you will receive. So he prophesied way back then that he would be rejected and that at one point would come we'd be receiving the Antichrist, not just those who are against Christ, but the Antichrist. Verse 14, and the crowns shall be to Halem and to Tobijah and to Jedaiah and to Hen, the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Lord. And they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Lord, and you shall know that the Lord of hosts hath sent me unto you. And this shall come to pass if you will diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. That's a good object lesson. Diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. It's a reminder to all who see and understand that the Lord will one day reign in his temple. Antichrist will be received, he'll be believed, he'll be accepted. He'll actually solve this problem that's going on in Jerusalem right now. Where is the temple located? Where will the new temple be built? And he will be just renowned until the middle, but as a wise man, as a great negotiator, and received openly until the middle of the Great Tribulation period, 3.5 years in, then he will demand to be worshipped as God. But God never intended for Joshua, this high priest in this day, to take control as king. But the Lord is making it clear here that the crown for Joshua was a picture of the future priest king, the future ruling priest king, Jesus, the Messiah. And the Lord himself will build that temple. He will see that it's done. So Zechariah is looking past the current temple. That was the temple of Solomon. It was destroyed and partially rebuilt, or a good deal rebuilt, but it was less than the first. And But Zechariah now is looking past this temple, past the temples of even of Herod, which would be the second temple, and he's going to talking about the temple that's to be built in the kingdom age. That's an exciting time to look forward to, as God is promising blessings in the future. Now look how we're moving right through these. Chapter 7, 14 verses. And it came to pass in the fourth year of King Darius that the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah in the fourth day of the ninth month, even in Chislu, when they had sent unto the house of God Sherezer and Regemelech and their men to pray before the Lord, and to speak unto the priests which were in the house of the Lord of hosts, and to the prophets, saying, Should I weep in the fifth month, separating myself as I have done these so many years? During the 70-year captivity, there would be a fast each year to remember the destruction of the temple, speaking of here. Verse 4, And then came the word of the Lord of hosts unto me, saying, Speak unto all the people of the land, and to the priests, saying, When you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh month, even those 70 years, did you at all fast unto me, even to me? And when you did eat and when you did drink, did not you eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Should you not hear the words which the Lord hath cried by the former prophets, when Jerusalem was inhabited and in prosperity, and the cities thereof round about her, when men inhabited the south in the plain? So the Lord is really checking the hearts of the people. He's saying, you're feasting, but who ordered these feasts? I didn't order them. Who ordered all these religious holidays you're celebrating? You're carrying out all these religious rituals that I didn't ordain. I didn't establish these. He's saying basically, why are you fasting? Well, they were fasting and weeping because they were being judged. They were out of their land. Their temple had been destroyed. Life was not comfortable. And God says, wouldn't it be better to just listen to what the prophets tell you to do? And do what God tells you to do through these prophets instead of doing what you think you ought to do? Look where it's landed you. When someone is continually in rebellion against the Lord and they're really staunch, you could, go to them and say, how's this working for you? That's kind of what God's saying here. You've been doing all this for quite a while. How's it working for you so far? How many things do we do so that we can feel good about ourselves and what we've done that God hasn't even asked of us? How many things are done within churches that God has not ordained, that God never asks of us? They're simply religious rituals. Now, Isaiah 58, I'm going to read a few verses out of here. Speaking of this, Isaiah 58, 3 through 8, I'm going to read that. Wherefore have you fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast you find pleasure and exact all your labors. Behold, you fast for strife and debate and to smite with the fist of wickedness. You shall not fast as you do this day to make your voice be heard on high. Is it such a fast as I have chosen? See, this is not a new subject for them. A day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? In other words, sometimes people fast just to be shown how holy they are. Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? He said, is not this the fast that I have chosen? It's like, is this how I would have you to fast? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him? And that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh, then shall thy break forth as the morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee, and the glory of the Lord shall be thy reward. That's interesting. They're just saying that something happens within our hearts when we're giving that actually brings health to us, brings physical health. This is God's kind of fast. This is God's reward. And he's saying, don't do what I haven't called you to do. We celebrate a lot of holidays that God didn't ordain. I mean, we just did Thanksgiving. It's not a problem to do it. God didn't ordain it. We're soon going to be celebrating Christmas. God didn't ordain that. We'll be celebrating Easter in the spring. God hasn't ordained that. Christ's birth and resurrection. We celebrate Christ's birth and resurrection. Am I saying don't celebrate those? No, not at all. Just know where they came from. They're man-made. Not his birth and resurrection. Those are real. Those are God-ordained. They're certainly real. But the dates that we've chosen to do those are sometimes man-made. The idea he's saying is, it's not bad to do that, but know where they came from. In verse 8, he goes on, something I had not thought about before. Let's see, we're in verse 8, aren't we? And the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, execute true judgment, and show mercy and compassions every man to his brother, and oppress not the widow, nor the fatherless, the stranger, nor the poor. Let none of you imagine evil against his brother in your heart. So he's saying, you want to be godly? Be fair, be merciful, be compassionate. Don't take advantage of the weak. Don't gossip, but guard your heart. So how did the Jews react when trying to decide to obey God or not? Well, next verse is here, verse 11. But they refused to hearken and pulled away the shoulder. You know, like that it's the physical moving, stop their ears. That they should not hear. It's not that they can't hear, they don't want to hear. They're plugging up their ears. Yea, they made their hearts as an adamant stone, lest they should hear the law and the words which the Lord of hosts hath sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore came a great wrath from the Lord of hosts. Therefore it has come to pass that as he cried, and they would not hear, so they cried, and I would not hear, saith the Lord of hosts. But I scattered them with a whirlwind, among all the nations whom they knew not. Thus the land was desolate after them, that no man passed through nor returned, for they laid the pleasant land desolate. This is how the fathers behaved when God spoke through the prophets. And we might often say, but I don't know God's will. I'm not sure what God's will is. How can I do it? Well, here's some ideas. We actually do know a lot about his will. We can find it in the Bible, and here are just a few excerpts. Pray without ceasing. Search the scriptures daily. Study to show thyself approved unto God. Love your neighbor. Usually not too hard. Love your enemy. Oh, that's hard. Be known by our love one for another. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for those that despitefully use you. Jesus told us to do all these things. Pray for those who persecute you. That's enough to work on for today. Well, you know, think about it. How do I know the will of God? Well, here's some things that are. Or are we stopping up our ears so that we can't hear, that we don't want to hear? I don't want to do all those things. We are who we are. We are who we are. Because the heart of mankind hasn't changed. The heart of man and woman hasn't changed. It's oftentimes not because we don't understand, but because we understand and turn away. It's not because we can't obey, but we won't. And I think God gives us a sense of humor to help us deal with who we truly are. Fallen sinners saved by God's grace. But he also gives us a sense of humor, I'm convinced, so that we don't become discouraged. Because he loves us anyway. And he died for us. And God's word is here so we will know his will. And so that we'll obey him despite ourselves. Even when we don't want to. That's the idea. Let's do chapter 8. It's 23 verses, but it's short. Verses 1 through 3. And again the word of the Lord of hosts came to me, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, in the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. It's a promise for that time in the future when Jesus will return, when Jesus will establish his kingdom here on earth. In verse 4, thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for every age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. We know this is future. Because the present, today's news, shows unrest in Israel. we know it's not safe on many American streets, especially after dark. But in the kingdom age, the streets will be safe everywhere. You can walk down a dark alley late at night and not worry about getting mugged, because God is on the throne and he's ruling and reigning and ruling in the millennial age. Verse 6. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, the remnant that are there, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord of hosts? Thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. East country, west country. Are you just talking about China and America? I don't know. I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. Certainly not true today, but it will be one day. Verse 9, thus saith the Lord of hosts, let your hands be strong, ye that hear in these days these words by the mouth of the prophets, which were in the day that the foundation of the house of the Lord of hosts was laid, that the temple might be built. Referencing Ezra chapter 5, first two verses, then the prophets Haggai, the prophet, and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophesied to the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them. Then rose up Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, and began to build the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. And with them were the prophets of God helping them. And then Zechariah, chapter 8, verse 10. For before these days there was no hire for man, nor any hire for beast, neither was there any peace to him that went out or came in because of the affliction. For I set all men against every one against his neighbor. But now I will not be unto the residue of this people as in the former days, saith the Lord of hosts. For the seed shall be prosperous. The vine shall give her fruit, and the ground shall give her increase, and the heaven shall give their due, and I will cause the remnant of this people to possess all these things. Remember Haggai, again, chapter 1, speaking of the rebuilding of the temple. Let me read you a couple of verses out of Haggai 1, verses 4 through 6. It says, oh, is it time for you, O ye that dwell in your sealed houses? In this house, the house of God, lies waste? Now therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. You've sown much, you bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earns wages to put it into a bag with holes. Seems like it often is the case. Now they decided to rebuild the temple, and now he says, Your seed will prosper, the children, the vine, the seed in the ground will prosper, the vine will bear fruit, the ground will be watered, the ground will be given back to you, all because you're doing God's work when you turn back to him. Verse 13, and it shall come to pass that as you were a curse among the heathen, O house of Judah and house of Israel, remember, Israel was the north and Judah was the south. So will I save you, and you shall be a blessing. Fear not, but let your hands be strong. Now he's speaking of a future age when God will bless his people. They'll actually be a light to the world. They'll be a benefit as one. We actually, all believers, will be a benefit as grafted in to the vine, spoken of in Romans 11. Verse 14. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, as I thought to punish you when your fathers provoked me to wrath, saith the Lord of hosts, and I repented not, so again have I thought in these days to do well unto Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. Fear ye not. These are the things that you shall do. Speak ye every man the truth to his neighbor. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates. Don't lie. And let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor. Not even imagine it. And love no false oath, for all these are things that I hate, saith the Lord. So he's talking about honesty in dealing with one another. Not only not doing evil, not even thinking of evil, not even thinking of sinning. So we need to be doing the things God tells us. Speak truth. He's telling them, be just. Let truth and peace flow out through your cities because you're worshiping me. And he says, don't do the things that I hate. What does he hate? Evil in our hearts, lying, because out of the abundance of the mouth, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Verse 18, and the word of the Lord of hosts came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the fourth month, and the fast of the fifth, and the fast of the seventh, the fast of the tenth shall be to the house of Judah joy and gladness and cheerful feast. Therefore, love the truth and peace. Says these fasts, he said, I didn't order them, but turn them into fasts of joy and gladness. Enjoy the days, like Psalm 118 says in verse 24, this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us be glad and rejoice in it. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I'm sorry. Now to finish the chapter, thus saith the Lord of hosts, verse 20, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people and the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord, and to seek the Lord of hosts, I will go also. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem, and to pray before the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass, that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. What a great time that's going to be when Jesus sets up his kingdom in the future. People rejoicing to go to Jerusalem, sitting at Jesus' feet, learning at his feet, listening to him teach. But what a testimony. You know, we see bands of people approaching our border even now, you know, trying to come in. And there will come a time when there will be no walls to hold people out. People will be pouring through the doors, pouring through the places of worship. And what an awesome time it will be when you see people just filling up the churches, pouring in the doors, just to hear that God's word is taught. You know, standing room only because people are so hungry for the word of God. Hearing that God is with us, knowing that God is with us, and just wanting to share that joy with one another of knowing him. And we can, you know, we have that in our own hearts, but what a sad thing when you look at all the destruction and all the pain that's going on in the world, and knowing that just knowledge of Jesus Christ, salvation through Jesus Christ can change lives as we are examples of. So, I mean, what was going on in that day is not a lot different than what was going on here. We hear the word of God, and as a nation, some of us obey it, some of us seek it and obey it, some don't. But a lot of how we are as a nation is going to be determined by how we listen to the word of God and obey his will. So I want to have a time of prayer, a few minutes of prayer. Frank or Rosemary called.